Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kerbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In my first Law Subscribed Live episode, Lauren Lester joined me to help answer the question, should I start a law firm? We answer that question and share the how to start a law firm as well. We decided to host this as a LinkedIn audio event since a lot of attorneys are on LinkedIn and there have been a slew of layoffs, especially at big law firms. If you're listening to this recording of the live conversation and you know an attorney who has recently lost their job, please share this episode with them so they can consider taking the leap and starting a law firm. I usually save talking in depth about my own firm for when I'm a speaker or a podcast guest. But if you wanted to learn more about my firm, then this is the episode for you. You could also go to MatthewKerbis.com, that's Matthew with one T, to watch or listen to all my speaking engagements where I usually talk about Subscription Attorney LLC. I'm going to be doing more live events in video and audio, so make sure to follow me on LinkedIn and click the bell to get notified when I'm going live. If you're listening to this at the time of publication, I'm going to be going live during the ABA Tech Show, so be sure to check that out. Thanks again to 650 for sponsoring this podcast. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. And as always, click the link in the show notes called Get Connected with 650 and enter your contact information for me to make a personal introduction between you and 650. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the recording of the live episode. Are you ready? I'm going to click go live and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it. We're going live. We've already got three guests. We just launched. Vlad, good to see you. I didn't know you you went solo, but I'm super happy to see that. So we've got some people coming in. If you guys could hear me, give me like a thumbs up in the react buttons. If our guests, Shirley, Brooklyn, Vlad, Flora, good. All right, cool. All right, Lauren, say something so we can make sure people hear you too.
Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here. Welcome to everyone and everyone who is joining.
Spoiler alert, the answer to should I start a law firm is yes. We're going to talk about how. We're just getting started here, so I'm going to make sure I post this again to my channel so everyone can see it. I encourage if anyone has any sort of additional input or questions or feedback, raise your hand and we'll be happy to sort of invite you up here and get your questions. If you are a solo practitioner or a small firm or just a firm owner, and you have some advice that you want to share as well, we encourage you to come up here on the stage too. We are doing our best to record this too, so that we can try to share it after this event. We're definitely doing our own creative solution to try to record it. We're not sure if everyone who comes on the stage will be recorded, but we'll do our best job to capture it the best that we can. With that, Lauren, if you just want to give a little bit of a background of yourself, what kind of law firm do you have, when you started your own firm, and your practice area.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Lauren Lester. I'm a solo attorney in Denver, and I've had my practice a little over 7 years now. I started it right out of law school, made that crazy plunge, and I practice for all of life's milestones. So I provide affordable legal services for divorce, marriage, death, and estate planning. And so I'm really excited to be here to just talk about my journey, the wins and losses, and certainly give you some information to avoid the losses so that if you are going out on your own, you can kind of accelerate your practice without having to trip over some of those stumbling blocks.
Yeah. This is great. I'm so excited to get into it. And then just a quick background on myself is I joined the Great Resignation in March of 2022 and decided to start my own law firm. I enjoyed where I worked before, but it's hard to build a practice within a practice. And I sort of decided that I wanted to pivot from litigation to transactional. I wanted to practice law differently and bill on subscriptions instead of billing by the hour, and trying to serve the latent legal market with affordable pricing. And I think you and I, Lauren, share that in common, that we're taking a different approach to accessibility with the way that
we
started our own law firms. And so I have a podcast, Law Subscribe, where I've talked to you twice. One of your episodes is live with your business partner, Jess Bednarz. And in the future, your second episode about your law firm will be coming out in the near future. But then that first interview that I interviewed about is about on top of just your law firm, you also have another business which actually helps lawyers practice law differently. So if that's not it's not really bearing the lead of the name of the business, but go ahead, tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so my business is a different practice, which, as Matthew said, I co-founded with my business partner, Jessica Bednarz. And it really was born out of trying to help other attorneys who came to us and said, "Man, I really like the way that you're practicing. How do I do this? I can't find any resources out there. They certainly didn't teach me any of this stuff in law school." And so we built a different practice to do exactly that. And our mission is to help solo and small firms optimize their practices for both growth and enjoyment.
Yeah, and so the reason why we decided it was important to have this conversation is because a lot of attorneys are being let go right now. A lot of that is happening more in big law, and so but in addition to just practicing law as business owners, where we have to focus a lot on the business and not just the practice of law, Lauren and I are thinking a lot about this also because I have the podcast. Lauren has a different practice, so we're also thinking all the time about what lawyers can do to have. To have a successful law firm. And so with that, I think let's just start out, Lauren, with this was your second career, and so you sort of knew you wanted to well, circumstances being what they were, you essentially went solo very soon after graduating, right? And so maybe talk a little bit about that, about some trepidation that you had and something that maybe share some lessons of some things that you wish you would have known then that you know now.
Yeah, so law is a second career for me. And I think anyone starting out opening their practice really needs two focuses. One is on the practical, substantive side of actually practicing law, and the other piece is on the business side. And so for me, coming out of law school, I certainly didn't have the substantive piece, but law being a second career, I had the business side. So I had worked as a project manager in the web development space for about a decade prior to starting my own firm. So I felt pretty good about the business piece. I certainly didn't know everything. I wasn't an expert by any means, but I had enough of a footing that I had some confidence there that I could open up my own practice. And on the substantive side, I really surrounded myself with folks who would provide that support here in Colorado. As I have heard in many jurisdictions, the legal community is a lot smaller than you might think. And so I really cold called, cold emailed colleagues and said, "Hey, I'm starting my firm. Can I take you out to coffee and just pick your brain?" And really found that there were a handful that I surrounded myself with and could ask them those substantive questions. And in return for a lot of them, offer them some of the business information and business advice that I had. So really starting out and building that network around you, because owning your own law firm, although amazing, has some challenges, and one of them is you're really siloed. Like, it's just you all day, every day, right? No one walks by your office and pops their head in to say, "Hey, how's it going?" Or, "I've got this quick question," and you can't do the same. So you really have to actively try and seek out those relationships when you're starting to build that network around yourself.
Yeah.
Oh, bye. I
Oh,
thought I
and
just saw a question, but
I did, Flora.
okay.
If we just got to a natural stopping point. I encourage you to raise your hand again. I can't invite you up here unless that hand is raised. Okay, there we go. Let's bring Flora up to ask a question. Hey, Flora, whenever you're ready, go ahead and unmute yourself and ask away. The mute button's in the bottom right corner of the pop-up. It's all good.
No worries. Hi,
Good
Flora.
afternoon. At this point, Flora, who raised her hand, we weren't able to record her audio, but she asked a question about launching a virtual law practice and living in one state but practicing in a different state because that's where she was licensed. And so you're going to be hearing us answer the question of what it's like to have a virtual law firm in response to Flora's question.
My practice is virtual. It helps me keep overhead low. And I really found, so pre-pandemic, I did it because I was just starting out and the cost I honestly just couldn't justify. So I was really hesitant to tell folks, like, "Oh, I'll meet you at a local coffee shop or some other public location you're comfortable with." And I found that the response to that was phenomenal. People are like, oh my gosh, thank you. I don't have to drive across town, or, you know, I'm busy. Or I met someone once, they were getting their oil change, and I met them at the car dealership, which, like, no, I mean, no one was there. It was like the most private conversation I think I've ever had. But she loved it because she was like, I'm just going to sit here for an hour anyway. I'm busy. I've got work, kids, life, right, to do. And so I've actually found it's a benefit because it lets me go out to meet people, as long as they're comfortable with it. So I like not having the overhead. And certainly after the pandemic, I think people are even more comfortable either with virtual meetings or, you know, meeting somewhere that works best for them. Yeah, and a virtual practice fits right in there. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, and Flora, it's always great to meet someone who listens to the podcast. As Lauren knows, because she has a podcast too. I'll plug her podcast. A Different Practice, right? Is the podcast, Lauren? You know, it's very much a solitary thing. Even when you have a guest, you sort of put the podcast out there, and you see the downloads. But it's hard to interact with listeners. So, Flora, it's great that you're here. I'm glad you're a listener, and feel free to. If when you are finally ready and you've got your virtual law firm up and running and you're using that subscription model, I'd love to have you on the podcast to interview you. But that's a great question. Virtual law practice, right? Like let's go off that, Lauren. So I have a virtual law firm. I'm in Deerfield, Illinois, but I serve clients everywhere in the state of Illinois. I've even served clients outside of the state, but transacting in Illinois. Right. I have a Florida client who has some Illinois franchises. I had a UK client purchasing commercial real estate in Illinois in a town like basically next door to me, like two towns over. And so and thanks to technology and Zoom and everything, I could like meet them face to face, confirm they're not a troll or a spammer, right? And now I could take on a client who's you know, across the ocean. Where I wouldn't have been able to do that before, I would have had a lot of trepidation about something like that. But I make my clients meet me at least on Zoom face to face in prospective client meetings. So so in a way, being a virtual law firm is actually a great way to potentially fight fraud because I'm requiring that clients meet with me on Zoom, camera on, to make sure you know I could look them in the eye that they're a real person, you know, not a spammer, and if they're willing to do that. I've had prospective clients who have reached out through the website where they see that I require that to meet with them and for them to sign up with me as a client, and then they either close the Zoom meeting or they cancel it. So it's actually like good fraud prevention is if you set up your virtual law firm in that kind of a way.
Right. And I love that you said too, it also allows you to serve a much bigger geographic area within the state of Illinois, which I feel too. I mean, I don't know a lot about Illinois, but I would imagine that there are some pockets that are maybe a bit more rural, like we have here in Colorado. I mean, there are literally counties that we have that have zero lawyers, like just not no family lawyers, like just no lawyers at all. And so in terms of kind of that access to justice piece too, right, being able to serve those folks, I mean, they wouldn't be able to travel to Denver to come to meet with me in my office, but they can certainly pick up the phone or we can have a Zoom meeting, you know, assuming that they have access to internet, which most folks do, or can certainly get to a place that has it. And so it allows me to have a much bigger reach within the state than I think traditional law firms were like, I was, you know, we're in Denver, we serve Denver, but we don't serve, you know, Colorado Springs, 100 miles south of us. So it really does expand your market capabilities too.
Right. And that's not to say that having somewhere to go in person can't also be valuable. Like I said, I'm in Deerfield, Illinois. We're getting what's called a brick and mortar, which is like a WeWork competitor, but it started in Park Ridge, Illinois. So it's like a local grown competitor to WeWork, where they're trying to serve the suburbs. And they're opening up May 1st in downtown Deerfield, which is only like a 3-minute drive for me or 8 minutes electric scooter ride. And
nice.
So I'm going to be one of the first people who sign up to subscribe to. I think they do like eight times a month is like their lowest subscription, to like go in there 8 times a month instead of, and they do a daily subscription. They do a virtual mailboxes. So instead of using like a UPS to be a virtual mailbox, if you want an actual physical place, clients can go and meet you for a virtual mailbox because you could still rent space a la carte through this WeWork type setting. Then you could do a virtual mailbox there. And I know, and all their pricing is super affordable compared to the high overhead of like an actual office space that you're renting. And one of the ways, you know, you and I, you know, that we're able to afford or provide affordable services is we keep our overhead as low as possible. But I'm really looking forward to that space also for networking. Small business owners are going to be renting the same space. That's my sweet spot, right, for clients. So it's almost like a marketing spend and not like a temporary office spend. I certainly wouldn't have been able to afford to do that in the first 6 to 8 months of me operating, right? But now I'm at a place where I could afford that. So like starting out virtually is also a really great way to just like bootstrap your business and get going.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I was really impressed about in terms of starting my own law firm was it didn't take really that much capital. I mean, people will start about talking about building a business and you need so much capital to get started. But really for me, it was my computer, which I had, and I think most people have. And for me, malpractice insurance, like that was kind of a non-negotiable. We aren't required to have it here in Colorado, but that just kind of made sense for me. But in your first year, you know, it's like really cheap because there's nothing to cover. But outside of that, I mean, there's a ton of tech and there's office space and there's all the stuff you could add, but it's really nice, or I found it really helpful to know that I didn't need any of that. And I could always add it on once I actually had the revenue coming in to support it. So you don't have to feel like, oh, I have to make this $10,000 expenditure when I have zero money coming in.
Right.
You really don't have to make that big of an investment.
Right, right. And I think that's something that's not talked about enough when starting a law firm is the costs, like the actual cost. Like I'm going to say right now, because I'm coming up on a year, right, of operating my business
in
just a few weeks. I know. And in terms of like operating expenses, not including advertising, of which I've done a little bit. I mean, it cost me $4,500 to operate. And the biggest spend for me was professional liability insurance.
Right.
And so for the first year, that's my non-advertising marketing expenses, right? I did invest another $1,500 into some ad spend, some marketing. So $6,000, you know, for a little bit of ad spend too for the first year of operating. And since I'm a subscription attorney, you know, I know that when I hit $500 in monthly recurring revenue, that if I keep those clients happy. Or in my case, I happen to get one client that signed up at that amount, right?
Yeah.
Like if I keep that client happy, then my expenses are paid for, right? And I certainly plan to, and I've upgraded some technology. So like I used to use like one document automation software. And now I'm moving over to Gavel, which Lauren, you use, which is formerly
right.
Documate, right? So
right.
So like I've made some upgrades with the technology that I'm using, but even that is all, because it's all subscription based and I have a subscription practice, I'm able to easily predict my income and my spend. And so I'm about to have a year's worth of data to do that. So I'm very excited to have that data to look back on. And you know, how you track that, right? Like there's, I don't know if I'm going to use this forever, but like right now, like I'm tracking all my, I do all electronic payments and I use Stripe to power my payments. I actually just signed up with Gravity Legal because I had my first client where I needed to open up a trust account. And that's a whole conversation we could have of how to do that. You know, at least in Illinois, you go on the Illinois Trust Fund website. They have a dedicated website. They have a form there. You fill out the form. You bring it to your bank. You have to do it in person, at least at my bank. And then it took an hour because they don't open these accounts every day. So like they don't know. They have to like go to their back office. They have to pull up their, you know, sheets of like how do you open up an IOLTA account? And then we were able to figure it out. I got set up, and now I need Gravity Legal. I just got set up. I'm in the process of getting set up with Gravity Legal so that I can pay for those fees and the processing fees through my operating account. But right now I use waveapps.com. And all I do is I integrate it with I share it. I think it's through Plaid or it's through like one of these integrations that are have all the compliance where it tracks all of my spending and all of my income, right? So I could produce all sorts of income statements or all sorts of, you know, expense reports and everything that I need to see where what I'm earning versus what I'm spending. And I go in at the beginning of every week and I categorize last week's income and spend. And so it's really easy for me to look at that data and see, you know, over the last year, what I made, what I spent, where I spent it. It's all categorized. And that way I could just send that PDF to my CPA, you know, for my taxes, which I haven't actually done yet, Lauren. I'd love to hear from you. How is tax season as a solopreneur? Because I haven't done it yet. So maybe talk a little bit about that. What are taxes like when you own your own law firm?
Well, if you're using Wave, which is what I use, they're super easy because I do the same exact thing. I think the key is keeping up with it consistently and not waiting until March to do your entire last year's organization. So I do mine the same. Like, for me, it's every month at this point, but I go through and categorize. Actually, it's twice a month. I go through and categorize income and expenses and just kind of keep my pulse on everything. But yeah, I just download the report that says cash in, cash out. What I like about Wave 2 is there's the confidentiality piece. So my CPA has no idea where this income comes from. I have a cross-reference, which is the invoice number, so that I could know for auditing purposes, this was this client, this is what I did, but they're not getting that information, but they just see revenue and expenses and they go through and that's all my accountant needs to. And then they give me a form and I sign it. And I do also pay quarterly taxes. So that is something as a solopreneur, whether you're an LLC or filing as an S corp, you do have to keep on top of. But I just got a percentage from my CPA and I just make sure revenue minus expenses for that quarter, whatever that percentage comes out to, I make that quarterly tax payment. But outside of that, it's pretty easy. It feels daunting, but once you kind of do it a few times, it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and we have probably all lawyers, so they all know this disclaimer, but no legal advice, no financial advice. Everything we're talking about is just for educational purposes only. I mean, this is all super important information, right? That's just not discussed. You just don't hear about it. You certainly don't learn about it in law school, right? There was something that I wanted to say that I gave that disclaimer for in particular, and now I can't remember what it was. So,
Talk to your CPA. Don't listen to us about taxes.
talk to your CPA. Don't listen to us about financials and all that. But yeah, that's something to it's important considerations. But just like even things like setting up a business bank account, right? So if you've never been like if you're not oh I know I remember now. So single member LLC versus an S corp, right? So if you're not a business law attorney, you don't necessarily you might not know this, right? But a single member LLC, you're essentially self-employed for tax purposes if you're just passed through taxation. There's a lot of different reasons to do it. It depends on your situation, but it is certainly the easiest way to start out. And I represent a lot of freelancers, and so that's usually the easiest way for them to start out to incorporate as a single member LLC. The typical reason why I'd counsel a client to switch over to an S corp is because then you're paying yourself as an employee, and there are certain deductions and certain like all the income coming into the firm isn't taxable in the same way, and so you can reduce tax liability. But it's hard to do that in your first year of operation, especially if you don't know how much money you're going to make. But you can transition from single member to S corp for tax purposes down the line. There are, your Secretary of State has certain fees associated with that. If you're not a business law attorney, hire a business law attorney to help you, make sure you're doing things compliantly if you're not comfortable with it. But yeah, like literally just like starting a business, right? So like, what do you do? Do a trademark search. Like if you want to hire a trademark attorney, to do that, then good for you. If you have the ability to do that, if you are a trademark attorney, it's a little bit easier. But do a trademark search. Search your Secretary of State's website for other businesses that have the name that you want, because you don't need to be your name LLC. It's not that it doesn't need to be what that is anymore. You could do that if you want. And there's like a lot of I've learned a lot from having Subscription Attorney LLC be the name of my law firm, because some clients love it, and some institutional clients are like, well, we want a more like law firm sounding law firm name. And so like I'm even debating like opening up a whole new brand and doing a DBA. Of course, I'd have to get an additional coverage, additional professional liability coverage for that. And it'd be the same entity but a DBA. So I'm debating whether or not I want to do that. But like whatever your business name that you want to have, is it even trademarkable? Is it too generic? I'm trying to think about something that might be ethical. It's like, we'll fight for you, California personal injury attorneys. So something like that, like something that's not like the best, right? You can't claim to be the best, but like we'll fight for you, California. You could, if you all in on a particular niche, make that your brand name for your law firm. Every jurisdiction allows it. Thank you, Law HQ, for suing the licensing bodies for law firms in every state to allow us to all have trade names everywhere. And it also becomes a sellable asset down the line, which is something else that's not talked about a lot, which is if you have if your law firm is not associated with your name, but it's associated with a trade name or a brand, then and you don't have a billable hour model, you have something more predictable, then being able to sell your law firm 10, 20, 30 years from now is a lot easier to do. And so those are considerations when even just starting your law firm is what trade name do you want to use? And is it available, you know, for a trade? Is it trademarkable from a U.S. trademark perspective? And also, is it available for your Secretary of State's LLC registration? If certain states have different rules, you have to be a PLLC. So, you know, every jurisdiction is a little bit different. But then also, is the domain available? That tradename.com. You know, and do you want that? You know, you have to do that search. Like, this is all the stuff about when starting a business. You have to make sure all these things are available. Every week I host talks for a freelancer group called Scaling Freelance on meetup.com/scalingfreelance. We have an unlisted YouTube playlist of all the past talks, and one of them is about websites. Like, you have to get your domain somewhere. Do you use GoDaddy? Do you use Google domains? If you're all in on Google Workspace for your business, so instead of Microsoft 365, I use Google Workspace. I wish I wasn't using GoDaddy already for many, many years, because I would have preferred to use Google Domains, because everything's just right there all in the same ecosystem. I use Google Voice for my VoIP for like my phone system. I'm all in on Google. I only have Microsoft 365 products because other lawyers use them. That's it.
That's funny.
So like little things like that about like running and operating your business. I have a lot of these talks with the freelancers, but it's all similar useful stuff from lawyers starting their business too, like from just like the nitty gritty, Lauren, of like operating a business. Like, what are some of the things, you know, that you had to do to set up to get started? I mean, it's further away for you than it is for me because I'm still in my first year, but still, I'm sure there's things like there's technology that you're using now that maybe you wish existed, you know, back when you got started.
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Yeah, no, I definitely, the website is where I started because that was my background. So it made sense to me. But I definitely think grabbing a domain name, that almost to me feels harder than the business name. So my domain name for my law firm is mylifelawyer.com. And my law firm is Lester Law. But that honestly came out of because Lester Law was like the domain was taken. It wasn't taken in Colorado, but the domain was taken. So I had to kind of come up with something different, which ended up being a great blessing. But yeah, kind of coming up with a domain that has keywords or that people can remember, that's not 50 characters long and uses words that are really hard to spell sometimes. That I actually found to be one of the challenges in starting is finding something that would work there and then getting the website up. It is from my background. So for me, that wasn't too bad, but there are a ton of templated sites that really make it kind of plug and play. You can put a basic website up, but I think now, you know, without a website, people are going to question like, is this law firm legit? I mean, the right. First thing people are going to do when they hear, you know, oh, Lauren started her own law firm is Google it and something's got to be there for them to find. So really the website of all the marketing things, I think down the road, getting into more marketing strategies, but that initial one was really helpful that I leaned into. And then for me, you know, it was little things like calendaring, and spending a lot of time upfront that I wish I changed sooner to have clients do that. I was really anxious in the beginning of like, I'm going to get double booked, like they're going to see my calendar. I mean, this isn't going to work. And then when I came across, I use Acuity, which I think now is Squarespace scheduling, but integrating that was like a game changer because I didn't have to go back and forth with the emails and does this time work and no, that time works. Oh no, that changes. So that really made a huge difference in terms of scheduling, both for potential clients because I could put it right on the website and take, I don't know, probably 3 hours a week off of my plate of dealing with that. And then even for existing clients that they could schedule at any time. So I wish I did integrate that sooner. It's a pretty inexpensive subscription for what it does. And then I use the Google Suite as well for my email. That was really easy to set up. I use Clio for my case management software. I don't love it, but I'm 7 years in now and thinking about changing is pretty daunting. But that's really kind of where I started. I didn't have a lot of tech in the beginning because, like you said, Matthew, right? Like the revenue isn't there. And really, I think where a lot of businesses and particular attorneys get in trouble is they buy all the stuff without having the data to say, I have the revenue to support this. So if you're on a subscription model and you're like, okay, when I get that 10th subscription, then I can go out and get whatever this software is that I'm looking at, that's really important versus I'm just going to buy all this stuff and hope the money comes in. That's a really risky way to operate the business in the beginning. And owning your own business is risky, but it's really a calculated risk that you want to take with some thought to it.
I mean, all this talk of legal tech, I'd be remiss to not mention that in a few days the ABA Tech Show is taking place in Chicago, and I know Jess Bednarz will be speaking, I
Yep,
think,
she
as
will be
well,
there.
and I'll be speaking on a couple of topics. So definitely, it's the expo hall pass is free. You just have to register, but if you want to go to talks, I think it costs something depending on how many days you go. But definitely, if you're in the Chicagoland area, you can make the trip. It's definitely worth it. I mean, there's so much good stuff there, and it's hard to like so for my website, like I use a no code builder called Card.co,
Oh, nice.
CARRD.co, and I used to have WordPress websites, not for my law firm, but for my podcast and for some other things. And I loved Card so much that I've moved everything over to Card. I have like a dozen something websites on there. Some of them just for fun. like I'm a wedding officiant. I haven't marketed that. I became an officiant for my sister-in-law to marry her to her husband. And like people know that I do it. And so like I made a website. So I like made things official, right? So I have a website for that. But like I really love the Card website builder. It's $19 a year, not a month.
Wow.
A year for SSL certificates for up to 10 websites for custom domains and pro template access. I think I pay like $49 a year because I want slightly more advanced no code features on the building side of things. But it's not optimized for blogging. And so if your content strategy is blog, you're going to need to go with like a WordPress or like a website builder that's designed around that. I am a solopreneur. I can never compete with that, in my opinion, for my space, since I'm the way that I'm tackling legal services. I don't have a niche. My price is my niche, right? I'm $20 a month. Accessibility is my niche. So because like affordable lawyer is like a hard thing to compete on in for SEO purposes, all of what would normally be my blog content is actually a subscription benefit. When somebody subscribes to my law to my as a client, they get access to my knowledge base, which I'm actually in the process of moving over to Notion to use to have like my knowledge base there. Right now it's just integrated with my client portal and Google Drive, which is not doesn't look great and it's not really great. So I'm building out a knowledge base on Notion for that reason. But like I mean, there's so many other tools and so many other types of things you could do. So like that's how I've decided to tackle that because Card is not good for blogging, and I don't feel like I could compete within that game. And my time I have to spend in other places. Time blocking is something I use right from the get-go that I think people would benefit from knowing about. As they start their own law firm, is I have a master list of everything I need to do daily, weekly, monthly, annually, and then as client issues come in, whether it's review this contract or negotiate this, I add that in another section in my master list, and then at the end of every day, I have time blocked. After we put the kid down, after after I've spent time with my spouse, I go back to my computer and I time block my next day. And so I don't use Acuity, I use Calendly, but I put everything in my calendar, personal things too. I got to, you know, the days I'm picking up the kid from daycare, you know, everything goes in the calendar. Time with family goes in the calendar. So I can't be double booked ever. And I set up rules in Calendly where no one could schedule time with me within 24 hours. I mean, I think it's 16 hours. It's whatever. The moment I sit down at my computer at 8:30 p.m., nothing can be scheduled with me the next day. And so I could plan out every single day in advance. I did a version of this when I was billing by the hour at my last job where I put stuff on a whiteboard, but it kind of fell apart with the pandemic. But but this is my version of it now as a solopreneur is time blocking. And you know, nobody's perfect. Like, I don't stick to it perfectly, right? But at least I have intention to do something and manage my time effectively because I'm not billing my time. And so it's important to really control your time super well. Lauren, are you a true solo? Do you use virtual assistants? Do you have any staff? How do you handle all that?
I am a true solo. I have no virtual assistants, no staff. I am looking at bringing on some contractors. That's kind of my toe dip into the expansion because I really do like being a solo. I don't want to have employees. And I've really leaned into tech to be able to do some of those admin things that just take away from my lawyering time or to help myself become more efficient. But contractors, I am looking at. I did have an assistant for a hot minute right before the pandemic. And that I feel was a little more me feeling like I needed to have employees to be a legit law firm. And so I did it. She was lovely. I mean, I loved her, but I also was like, what? I don't see the benefit here. And I'm always really cognizant of cost and expenses and overhead. And, the pandemic hit and, she needed to have a more, full-time job because she was only working part-time with me. So it really worked out great for her. But when she left, it was kind of like, you know, did I really get the benefit out of this? And so I kind of had to work on that limiting belief that having an employee was what made me legit. And ever since then, I've said, you know, no, that doesn't work for me. So I really try and, like I said, use tech wherever I can and just have it be me, which really means, you know, all the money that comes in is mine, which is kind of nice.
Yeah. And then for outsourcing a little bit, I mean, are you looking at like law clerk? Like, is that like where you're looking, or are you trying to hire your own like freelance attorneys? Like, how are you outsourcing?
Yeah, no, I just, so about 6 months ago, really about a year ago, but 6 months ago, I really committed to it. I just decided I wasn't doing any more contested work, especially in the family space. It was leading me towards burnout, to be quite frank. And so I had stopped doing it. And then in the last 6 months have recognized that on a personal level, it's been a great decision. On a business level, I've probably lost some potential sales that I would have had easily in the bank because I was like, listen, if you get to a hearing, I'm not your gal anymore. And they really wanted someone to be there the whole stretch, which I totally understand. And so in just talking with a colleague over coffee one day, kind of the idea sparked and she said, you know, I like doing hearings and it's kind of like storytelling. And I looked at her like, you had six heads because that's not in my space. But I thought, I really like, she practices similarly to how I do. We have same values. She also offers flat fees. And in Colorado, we can't do any referral payments at all. And so I thought, you know, what if I brought her in as a contractor to handle if I have a case that goes to hearing and I can easily transition to her and be there as a support. So that's kind of where it came out of. It was just kind of talking with someone. So I'm taking it super slow, just one contractor right now to kind of work out all the kinks of that process. But I'm hopeful that it'll be successful and help me kind of expand the business a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I guess we'll have to have another one of these in the future about like lessons learned from working with contractors, freelance lawyering. It's called per diem attorneys for like court appearances. Like there's a whole jargon like around that. I know when I got started, since I only had like a couple of clients, I was on LawClerk. Legal as a freelancer to like supplement the work. And I think that's an important thing to talk about is one of the ways I decided I would be comfortable
leaving a firm to starting my own practice is because of platforms that exist like that. Priori is one. Law Trades is one. With Priori and Law Trades, I found that a lot of the clients on there, if it's like in-house or like they're looking at former or current like big law attorneys who are moonlighting. So like depending on where you are, like that might not be right for you. But with all the layoffs with big law, that could be perfect for you if you have that pedigree. But like lawclerk.legal is a really great place for finding extra work, picking up some extra work. And the reason I kind of stopped doing it is because they were really pushing their subscription model, which their subscription was like subscribe to law clerk freelance lawyer hours. And like I had to track my time. And I was just like, I started my own law firm based on the subscription model. It's hard for me to like bill time, and all the flat fee work ended up being really like underpaid work. So I was on there for a little bit. But then I found that I really just need to double down on my efforts to like get clients and like get out there, but in the future, like when I need to hire freelance attorneys, I'll probably use Law Clerk, and because they like do everything for you. It's like working with an agency, right? And there's benefits to outsourcing that part of and being an employer, even of contractors. But going back to the getting clients thing, Lauren, you could start your law firm. You could find the business name. You could have the domain. You could have the technology. You could have the business model. You could be really good at practicing law. But how do you get clients? Like, that's a really important thing. Like, and if I could tell you, and I do this when I go speak to local high schools and colleges, I'm like, be nice to everyone. Like, you never know who's going to send you a client in the future. If nobody's mean to you, you're the one who's being mean to everyone else, and go and apologize because they could send you business in the future. I've had people from elementary school that after going solo, they referred people to me. And so like be nice to everyone. But if you can't, you know, everyone's a potential person who could send you business. But short of that, you know, like you've already started the business or you're about to start the business. Like what are some ways that you've been able to actually like generate business?
Yeah. So I think the first one is getting really clear on your message, which took me a while to do. But once I did, it made marketing a lot easier. So it's sort of like when you're at a networking event or talking to someone or in the grocery line, like being able to say what your business does and what problem it solves in 15 seconds is really helpful. So like you said, Matthew, that person can remember it. So then when they come across the person who's getting a divorce, starting a business, whatever, like, oh, you got to go talk to so-and-so. I met him at the grocery line. He's fantastic. So really getting clear on your messaging and making it really short and concise is helpful. And then for me, again, I leaned into the web development. I still think that having a website, focusing some on SEO is really important. But what I've really found to get the most benefit recently is video. Posting videos on YouTube. And for me in particular, I love TikTok. I know it gets a lot of slack, but I think it's a latent market for attorneys. I think it's a hugely untapped market that has a lot of potential. Our podcast that launched today on a different practice is all about TikTok. So if you're curious, go check that out. I go through all of the potential and even some tips to get started. But that's where I think marketing really has become is creating that know, like, and trust factor in a scalable way, which is going to be consults, but that's a one-on-one thing. And there's only so many you can do in a day and continue to run the business. Whereas you can set up your phone in front of you and say, hi, I'm Lauren. I'm an attorney in Colorado. I offer affordable flat fee rates for divorce. And, you know, here's the first three things if you wanted to file for divorce. Just becoming a source of knowledge and showing your authority by providing information only, no legal advice, because I know that freaks everybody out, understandably. But just being a source of information and putting yourself out there in that way, I have found in the last 6 months to a year has had a lot of ROI I don't pay any money. It's literally my phone and I'm just talking to it. So talk about keeping, you know, overhead low. I think that's really a great opportunity for attorneys, especially when you're starting out and you have some extra time because the client work isn't coming in yet, is to lean into those and get your name out there that way.
Yeah. I mentioned the freelancer, like educational sort of content videos, like live events that I'm doing. They're like semi-private live events. You have to join the meetup group, but it's free to join. I just did a talk on just contract negotiations. Like, and that was a huge hit, and I actually thrived in it. And I've done like a dozen talks now. So I've committed to weekly like talks, like discussion topics. It's more of a conversation, but that one ended up just being me and one other person. So I ended up doing a lot of the talking because they were just a 3D motions graphic artist who's a freelancer. And so she had some really good questions for me that I didn't think of for my talk. But I was like, this is so gold that, and I record them too in addition to live streaming. Like, I'm going to chop up some of this stuff and come up with a whole content strategy just around contract negotiations, which is not legal advice. Like,
right.
I'm not giving, it's not your contract. I'm talking
right.
in broad scopes. You know, here's some here are some clauses that you should have in your contract. Here are some ways to make them either favorable for you or to make them mutual, which I'm all about collaborative law. And so, like, let's make things mutual. It's not let's grow the pie. There's no need to split the pie, right? So let's grow the pie. Let's make a bigger pie and let's all eat pie. Okay.
That sounds awesome.
There's a takeaway from today. And I listened to that episode this morning on TikTok, and I was like, all right, I wasn't thinking about TikTok for this contract negotiations content strategy that I'm building, but you know what? Because of Lauren's podcast episode, I'm gonna have to do it. I'm gonna have to incorporate it.
Nice.
So at least you've inspired one person. But I agree. I like when I a little bit of the advertising spend that I did was Google Ads, and 90-something% of like the clicks on my ad were actually in YouTube. They weren't in search; they were in YouTube. People are going to YouTube and they're going to video for their legal questions. And who do they get? Legal Eagle, talking about news coverage. There's another woman who does it. I can't remember her name right now. I am subscribed. I actually think I unsubscribed from her channel because she posts so much and like I had to get it out of my feed. But she's also just doing like news coverage from a legal perspective. So there's and then there might be one other attorney, like Attorney Tom or something, who's doing that. And so there's three lawyers who are doing legal news coverage. Like they're just talking about the news from a legal perspective, and they have hundreds of thousands of followers. I think Legal Eagle's got millions. And so I don't know if like that's driving business to them, because I think they're like making money through like traditional like YouTuber ways, like sponsorships
right.
and stuff. But people are going to YouTube to try to get legal questions answered. And so like I need to invest more time in making video content for a YouTube channel. And so I'm sort of experimenting with the freelancer group for my non-law firm YouTube channel. And then I'm learning things about like live streaming, and I'm making mistakes, figuring out some stuff, and I'm practicing there while I'm still also trying to like make valuable content for potential clients, so that I can finally start doing stuff with my law firm. But I do think the future of like getting clients and also having content that you could record once and have it repeatable in other places is video. And if your law firm does not have a YouTube channel, there's been a recent update to YouTube where you can get your YouTube channel is youtube.com/@. And then you could get your firm name and you could try to do that. And so I highly recommend you do that. I have four, because I also have the at Gmail accounts for like my different things that I do. So I have subscriptionattorney@gmail and I have subscriptionattorney.com. So one of them I have @subscriptionattorney and another one I have is @thesubscriptionattorney, just in case.
Smart.
I didn't want anyone else
yep.
to take that one. So you know, it's something that you should go out and do right now. That goes into the conversation of getting your domain, get your social media handles. Like you want to create a cohesive brand around your firm, right? Make sure the social media handles are available. Subscription attorney was too long for Twitter, so I have subatty, SUBATTY, and I haven't really done anything with that yet. So it's also part of my content strategy. But because of that, I also decided I should be proactive and get SUBATTY.com. And so I do, and I have that. And so since it's the abbreviation of subscription attorney, sometimes when I'm giving somebody my email, subscription attorney is a mouthful. And so I just give them SUBATTY.com, and then they can get in touch with me, and it responds with my email, which goes back to another thing about I love about Google Workspace is email aliases. Mm-hmm. So while you want to be ethical, you don't want to tell people that you have a multiple person shop if you're a true solo. Like I have aliases set up that are support@subscriptionattorney.com, request@subscriptionattorney.com, finances@subscriptionattorney.com. And you could set up like 100 something aliases through just like one domain. And you could also do multiple domains. So I have all of those as well at SUBATTY.com, right? So you know, you can, and at least when it comes to email organization, that is, You know, you could easily search that email address if something went to that, and you could see all the support emails, all the request emails, all the finance-related emails. So whenever you subscribe to a new thing, like a new software thing for your law firm, you could do finance@lawfirmname.com, and then you could very quickly find all the email receipts, right? So, you know, these are like little hacks for your law firm to make it easier to run so you're not spending 20 minutes searching for that email, you know, like having things like that. And speaking of email inbox organization, I have three folders. I have inbox, I have follow-up, and I have archive. And that's it. I try to stay
that's
out
impressive.
Of my I try to stay out of my inbox. And I have so for this big client that I have, I do have a filter that automatically categorizes them into a separate folder because I am doing a lot of work for them. But I very rarely have to go in there. Right? Because think about how often are you actually going into your folders? Can you have a more efficient way that you operate your business than just being in email folders all day? I have a client portal. I use SweetDash. It only costs me $130 a year. I do have a deal on that. I think the one I'm using right now is $150 a year. It's kind of like a blank slate. It's kind of like Notion. You get in, it's just a white page, and you have to customize it, but it's all no code. You spend some time doing that, and it's going to be a lot cheaper than using a Clio. And you could integrate it with Stripe, and you could power subscriptions and all their flat fee pricing, and it's really easy. There's secure messaging with two-factor authentication so that your messages with your clients are actually secure, unlike email, which is unencrypted. So, and if you're going to be texting with your clients, Signal is encrypted texting. And so I do text with clients through Google Voice, but I have been looking at using Signal because it's more encrypted, and we have to preserve attorney-client privilege. Right. And the SweetDash is HIPAA compliant, too, if you turn on two-factor authentication, because doctor offices use them as a client portal. So, having a client portal software like that is something that could be really useful. They do have like Calendly Acuity like features, though they're not as good. But they also have a built-in CRM, and I'm using that for my CRM, which is a client or customer relationship manager, so that you could keep client information, birthdays, kids, dogs, you know, all that stuff. So that you could communicate with them, you know, instead of doing like happy birthday cards or happy whatever, you know, anniversary. Like I would prefer to do like a happy anniversary card, like do something different. So like on your anniversary of them first hiring you, you know, send them a thank you or send them a, hey, happy anniversary. Right. So everyone gets New Year, happy New Year's. Everyone gets all those cards, like do a holiday other people don't do, or do like your relationship with them. Anniversary is a good way to maintain clients. I found Nextdoor. I've done some Nextdoor spend for marketing is really good. It's at the cheapest level, it's $3 a day, super affordable. You already know everyone that you're marketing to is a verified person because they sent a postcard to them. So every single person on Nextdoor is a verified person who's in your area or wherever you decide to market from. The way that it works is you're presented with a map, and wherever your business address is, it's a circle that goes out and out and out and out. So you can control how wide or how narrow your ad is going to go for that. But you could also post for free, just like other social media platforms. You could do as many free posts through your business account on Nextdoor. But I've got Nextdoor recently launched an events tab where you can now do events and post them, like, or at least post that you have an event on Nextdoor. So in my content marketing plan is do a Zoom, like do a Zoom event, but post it on Nextdoor for contract negotiations. You know, I have a planned talk on, you know, answering the question, should you use a bill of sale when you buy something or sell something on Nextdoor, right? I mean, the answer is yes, but how to do that, right? So like ask questions that, and like pay attention to like what's happening on Nextdoor, like ask, and then from a legal perspective, if you could serve that, host an event on Nextdoor or do an ad on Nextdoor, $3 a day, real cheap when it comes to ad spend. And there's not a lot of lawyers who are doing that right now. So that's where I've been able to get some clients.
That's super smart. I'm going to steal your idea, Matthew. I'm doing that.
All right. So see, even though we only have 6 listeners right now, you and I are at least teaching each other things.
Yes.
So we're getting some value from this too.
I think that's a really important point. Like talking, if you are going to jump in, which I think is where I started, not only for the substantive maybe side of things, but for the business side, like surround yourself, get in connection, get in community with other small business owners so that you can say, you know, hey, Matthew, how's it going? It's been a year. Like, what's been going on? What's your challenges? And then he goes, I've been posting on Nextdoor and doing events. And I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. I should do that. Right. So like that community we don't get in law school. No one teaches you how to run a business. And then you get out and you're like, I don't, how do I figure this out? So it is just really important to to connect with people who can share those ideas and learn from each other.
Yeah, I 100% agree. So we're 7 minutes to the hour now, so we're going to start wrapping up. I encourage anyone, raise your hand if you want to ask any questions for the time we have left. But Lauren, you mentioned your law firm. Where can people find that, and where can people find a different practice?
Yeah, so my law firm is mylifelawyer.com. Like I said, I practice in Colorado, but do provide all flat fee affordable pricing, which is all on my website. And then if you are interested in learning how to optimize your law firm for growth and enjoyment, check out A Different Practice at adifferentpractice.com.
Yeah, excellent. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney. Obviously, connect with Lauren and I on LinkedIn if you haven't already.
Yes, please.
Since we're hosting this LinkedIn audio event, and my law firm is subscriptionattorney.com, where all my prices are also on my website. I very much have designed the anti-law firm website, so it's very much not like any other law firm website that you'll ever go to. There's a very intentional potential client journey that I want to put people through, and I make it easy to sign up to be a client right from my website. I still have to, if you read the disclaimer, I still have to conduct a conflicts check, which I do. My biggest takeaway from my website that I wish I would have learned in the beginning was I have a floating button where on any page, someone could click that button and schedule a time to talk to me. That's an intro call. And I make that the first button on my page because I started to get weekly signups for potential clients when I made it really easy to sign up with me. And I restrict the time, you know, so I'm not getting those scheduled calls at any random time of day. I control that through Calendly, but that was a really simple embed code on card using Calendly. So that's my takeaway from that website. So highly recommend you check out my website. But then if you want to learn more about just the innovative things that Lauren is doing and that other lawyers are doing with legal services and how they're disrupting the billable hour, my podcast is called Law Subscribed. It's on every podcasting app and even some of the ones you've never heard about because I made sure that it's there. And it's you could also go to lawsubscribed.com. I've actually, at the recommendation of Jess Birkin, who also has the newsletter called Hack Your Practice. It's hackyourpractice.lawyer. She has some really interesting tips there. And she said, I need to start having web pages for every single guest. So soon I'll have like web pages for like every guest. But for now, lawsubscribe.com. You click on the podcast tab and click on whichever service you like to use for your podcast and subscribe to it there. So with that, I'm not seeing any hands raised. Any final takeaways from you, Lauren?
Just to dive in, if you've been thinking about it, it really is fantastic. I wouldn't change being a solo or opening my own business for anything. It is challenging. There are definitely days I question my sanity, but overall would not change it. And I think if you want to have an impact on your community, control your life a lot more, have freedom, and really just love the practice of law again, being a solo or even a small firm running your own business is really the key to doing that.
Yeah, I love it. We're not going to get better than that. If you have any follow-up questions, DM us on LinkedIn.
Please. Yes, please connect.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.